So what are nanobots and how will they potentially help us defy death, and how much longer could they make us live for?
Well, disease and illness are caused largely by damage at the molecular and the cellular level. Today's medical technology is very large on this scale. The finest surgeon scalpel is more suited to rip and tear than it is to heal and cure. Now, if we had tools that were molecular, both in their size and their precision, that we could intervene at the cellular and the molecular level, and we could cure disease at the fundamental level, and that's what medical nanorobots or nanobots are going to be able to do in the future. So that's the basic idea. Very small, very precise, and very intelligent. They're under computer control, so they can intervene and carry out surgical procedures in a way that today's surgeons can't, because their tools are simply too big and too imprecise.
And how small are we talking? Are there any comparisons to
really, really small? I mean, we're talking down at the scale of not many atoms. Atoms,
wow.
An atom is smaller than a nanometer. And to give you a feeling for it, my arm is about a meter in length. 1,000 times smaller than my arm is a millimeter. And 1,000 times smaller than that is a micrometer. And 1,000 times smaller than that is a nanometer. And atoms are a little bit smaller than a nanometer. So they're really, really, really tiny. And if you want to think about it, atoms are sort of the Lego blocks that nature uses to build really small molecular machines. So really small, that's the scale.
If they're that small, how are humans able to create them then?
Well, we don't exactly create them, but we use them. I mean, imagine, like I said, suppose you've got a Lego set that's really, really small, and you're able to sort of assemble them and reassemble them. Now, chemists are very familiar with atoms and molecules because chemists assemble atoms in very precise arrangements all the time. Now, chemists have a hard time scaling up. From the chemist's point of view, the challenge is not how do you arrange atoms precisely. The problem from the chemist's point of view is how do you make really big structures where every atom is in the right place. So chemists can make tens and hundreds and thousands and even tens of thousands of atoms that are very precise. But when you get larger, well, there are a few things. DNA, for example, is very large, but it's a very specific structure. If you want to arrange things where every atom is in the right place, and this gets into a very famous talk by Feynman in 1959, where he said he wanted to arrange the atoms the way he wanted. And that was sort of the first hint that perhaps we could arrange atoms in most of the ways permitted by physical law if we had the tools to do that. So that's sort of a general idea.
Yeah. And what do we want them, what do we want to arrange them into to be able to help our bodies? Let's say a blood vessel was damaged or something. How would arranging them into a certain order help it repair that?
Well, if you have a blocked circulatory system, so your blood vessel is jammed up, what you'd like to do is clear it out, sort of like Roto-Rooter. So if you had a very small medical nanodevice, and at this point, I'd be talking about a micron in size. So a micron is big on the scale of atoms, but it's still very small compared with the size of you and me. But if you had a micron size medical nanodevice and this micron-sized medical nanodevice was built with every atom in the right place, then it could do things like remove the blockage in the circulatory system and do so with very great precision. And after clearing out the blockage, you then have a circulatory system that was now clear. And when you remove it, you know, people imagine that you just gouge it out and remove it. You'd want to be able to remove the material that was blocking it and sort of hold on to it rather than let it float freely and cause other problems in the circulatory system. So there are various ways of doing that, but it would be a way of doing it that was very neat and tidy, I suppose, would be the way of expressing.
Yeah, and I assume it's not just going to be a one-size-fits-all nanobot. Is it going to be very specific nanobots for specific diseases and problems, right?
There are a lot of different proposals. I think one of my favorites is the respirocyte. Now, we all know that we breathe. I breathe in, I breathe out. And when I breathe in, the oxygen enters my lungs, and then it flows through my circulatory system, and oxygen reaches my tissues, and that's good. Now, there are conditions where I don't get as much oxygen as I should. Perhaps the most dramatic is if I have a heart attack and my heart stops pumping blood, and then, of course, that's very bad. One of the proposals is for a respirocyte. Now, a respirocyte is conceptually very simple. It's a high-pressure tank. It would store oxygen at perhaps 1,000 atmospheres. And this high-pressure tank might be a micron in size. And you'd inject a therapeutic dose of them, so there'd be a large number of them floating around in your circulatory system. And they would release oxygen into the tissues. So they'd release just a little bit. And when they passed through the lungs, they'd absorb oxygen. And when they entered the tissues, they'd release oxygen. So they'd have to be able to measure the partial pressure of oxygen in the tissues. And of course, in the lungs, there's a high partial pressure of oxygen. So they'd absorb oxygen. And in the tissues, there's a lower partial pressure of oxygen. So they'd release oxygen to bring up the partial pressure of oxygen. Now, what's interesting is that these respirocytes could store enough oxygen to keep you oxygenated for many hours. So if you had a full therapeutic dose of respirocytes, you could do some things that were kind of interesting. For example, you could have this dose of respirocytes, and then you could essentially go scuba diving. In other words,
wow.
Instead of having a single big tank of oxygen on your back, you have teeny tiny distributed scuba tanks all throughout your circulatory system. So when you go underwater, they would provide you with oxygen. And you could just swim underwater, and there you'd be. You could go to the bottom of the swimming pool and just sit there going hum-de-hum-de-hum. Here I am at the bottom of the swimming pool, having a good time, enjoying myself. And you could just sit there for an hour. Then you could come up, and then the little respirocytes would be, you know, they'd run out of oxygen after a while, but then they could refill if you started breathing again. Now, that's not a very, how shall I put it, incredibly valuable scenario. I mean, sitting at the bottom of the pool for an hour is perhaps not the most wonderful way to spend your time. But now think of another scenario. Suppose you're at risk for a heart attack. And now suppose that you're going about your life and suddenly you have a heart attack. Now, normally, if you have a heart attack, you're not able to do much. You have a heart attack, you realize you're having a heart attack, and you fall over. If you had a dose of respirocytes, your first response would be, oh, my heart has stopped. But if you have respirocytes, throughout your circulatory system, they would still be delivering oxygen to your tissues. So your response would be, oh, my heart has stopped. I wonder what I should do. And even though your circulation had stopped, you would still be getting oxygen. Your tissues would still be oxygenated. And your first response might be to get out your cell phone and call your doctor and say, Doc, my heart has stopped. What should I do? And your doctor, of course, would say, look, you've only got an hour. You better get down to the emergency room. And you say, oh, okay, I'll go to the emergency room. And you go to the emergency room and you walk in and you say, hey, my heart has stopped. Now, the first couple of times this happens, the people in the emergency room are going to say, what? How can your heart be stopped and you're still walking around? And you say, well, I got these respirocytes and they're providing oxygen. And the emergency room techs talk with your doctor and say, what's going on here? And then they say, okay, we got to treat you real fast. This is very different from you have a heart attack, you fall over, and unless you're real lucky, you die. Very different scenario. So now suddenly we've shifted what happens. We've given you an hour in which to respond because you've got this dose of respirocytes in your circulatory system. So that's one scenario that might happen in the future once we have a particular class of medical nanorobots called respirocytes. And there are articles on respirocytes that discuss how they work and what's going on and what the technical issues are. But we don't have them today. We want to have them. And I think it would be really useful if we developed them, for example, before your listeners developed heart attacks. I mean, just think about it. Wouldn't it be nice to develop this in, say, 10 or 20 years before people had heart attacks and before the people listening had heart attacks? That would be nice.
It'd be so, very helpful.
Very helpful. Yes, exactly. So that's one of the things on the horizon.